Welcome to another episode of MSDN Dev Radio. My name is Peter Ladotti. I am a technology evangelist with Microsoft, and I am joined today on the show with my teammate, Brian Hitney. Hello, Brian.
Hey, Peter. How's it going up there? I see you have power, finally, after Sandy came through.
I do. My online personality is Jersey Shore Dev Guy. I do live at the Jersey Shore, and it was pretty hectic up here. Went 2 weeks almost without power, but fortunately for me, everything's okay. Family's safe. House is okay. Can't say the same for a lot of my neighbors and friends in the area, so it's definitely been an impactful month up here, but glad that I'm back at it. A little bit of survivor's guilt, but it is good to be back online and be juiced up and powered and back at work.
Yeah, well, great. Glad to have you back, and sorry about all the devastation up there. Let's talk about the cloud and what's going on with everything that we're doing in Windows Azure. It's been a little while since you and I have been able to sync on this. So one of the most recent announcements has been the new price reductions in Windows Azure. So we should talk about that a little bit, because it seems like it's a big thing, it's such a competitive landscape out there. When Amazon or Google or anybody adjusts pricing, it's so competitive to keep everybody on par with each other. So it's pretty exciting that we have this type of competitive arena, and it means consumers really get amazing prices on everything. So do you want to run down any of these changes?
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of those commercials for Walmart with the happy face bouncing around the store and the little price tags drop. And they're weird drops. They're like 99 cents to 98 cents to 90, to 86 cents. They're, oddball numbers. So, yeah, and we've seen this pattern, during the lifespan that Windows Azure has been in the marketplace, where prices drop. And, there's two ways to look at it. It's economies of scale as this hardware becomes cheaper and we scale larger, it just becomes easier to reduce the price. And then there's the competitive nature, where you have to respond to the market, what our competitors are doing. And I believe back when Azure started, we're talking about just general storage. So in Azure, you've got relational storage and non-relational storage. But in the non-relational storage, like blobs, the NoSQL, the table storage, which is where you're going to store things like video files and static content and images, that price when Azure came out, I think it was somewhere around like 16 cents a gigabyte or something like that back in 2008. And it dropped, I think, to 14. I think back in March of this year, it dropped to 12 cents a gigabyte. And then they actually introduced the ability, whether you want to have that data geo-replicated or not. By default, all of your data stored in Azure is stored on at least three physical pieces of hardware, and also across two data centers, so that if one data center goes offline, your data is somewhere else to be recovered. And they introduced an option if you don't want geo-replication, you just want it to be one data center, you could even get the price down to something, I think it was like 9 cents a gigabyte. Well, with this new price reduction, I think, Brian, you've got something we can share on the screen, and we'll probably patch that in. But the price now for geo-replicated storage, non-relational storage in Windows Azure, is down to 9.5 cents per gigabyte. That's pretty incredible.
Yeah, it is. And if you turn off the geo-replication, it goes down to 7 cents per terabyte. Per gigabyte, right, up to the first terabyte of storage. And that's the other interesting thing here, is that it's now tiered, right? So the more data that you consume, you end up falling into a different pricing tier, which lowers the price as you store more data in it. It's similar to what we did with the SQL databases, right, where as we went further up, is the amount of data that you store in there, the pricing drop. So the first tier is, as we just said, say for locally redundant only. So your data is redundant within the same data center, not geographically load balanced to another data center. It's 7 cents per gigabyte up to the first terabyte per month. But then looking at this chart, what I love about the chart is I like how it scales all the way to over 9,000 terabytes per month, and it says contact us. I love that. Like, who has that much data that, you know.
9,000 terabytes, is that, that's like, that's petabytes? That would be 9 petabytes? Does that sound right?
Yeah, I think so, right? Isn't 1,000 terabytes a petabyte?
I think so.
Yeah, well, we'll have to, if not, we'll delete.
Who do you have to know to know someone to, you know, and that contact us, you know, thing on the chart doesn't even have a link. So you have to probably know someone to get that pricing there.
Right, exactly. You know, and I know that Netflix and a bunch of others, I'm sure, fall into that category, but it just strikes me as an awful lot of data. But yeah, it's neat to see this. Again, everything, all these, this competition is really good for consumers, so it just lowers the price point even further, which is really great. You know, sometimes, though, and I do get asked this, and I just want to clarify, sometimes there is confusion over what the georeplication means, because some people see this option, and in fact, I'll show this on my desktop right now, and we'll put a clipping of this as we're talking here, but under a storage account, there is an option for georeplication, whether or not it's on or off. And you had mentioned this, Peter, where by default it is always on, so that your data is backed up to another data center for disaster recovery purposes. And you can save a little bit by turning it off. But the one thing that I think is really important to point out is that it doesn't mean that your data is not redundant within the same data center. There are multiple copies, at least 3 copies of your data in part of your storage account. So it is redundant and backed up within the same data center. So the georeplication is really there for disaster recovery purposes, for storing that data outside the data center. So I usually get asked about that quite a bit as to what kind of impact that has in terms of your data storage.
Yeah, typically when you're in the data center itself, I think that the thing we've always said is it's on at least 3 pieces of physical hardware in a data center. So likely not 3 hard drives in the same rack, probably split across multiple racks, maybe different containers in the data center. So if, you know, any one of those hard drives goes bad, the system detects it and automatically will restore it from the other 2 pieces of hardware there. And of course, you know, if there was a tornado or heaven forbid some other disaster, you know, we can always get the data back from the other data center.
Right.
So let's get on and talk about the demo that we actually wanted to show with everyone today. And last time on Dev Radio, when we were on talking about Azure, we had Brady Gaster on from the Windows Azure team out in Redmond talking to us about Windows Azure websites, which is a newer way of hosting applications or websites in a multi-tenant environment on Azure. It's a real great way to get started very easily. But the nice thing, at least from a developer perspective, is the ability to deploy using the tools you already use. So, you know, previously in Azure, you had to package your application up. If you want to do, let's say, a cloud service using the Azure tools to create an Azure project, now you can just use FTP, just push your code up. You can deploy from source control repositories like Git, or also TFS, Microsoft's Team Foundation Server, which is our application lifecycle management tool, beyond just source control. It does a whole lot of things. And I thought it'd be pretty cool today to, you know, talk about that and actually demo how you can wire up a project in TFS and deploy it into Azure websites. So Brian, I think you're going to help us with that.
Yeah, that sounds like a great idea. Let's just show a quick demo of integrating TFS with a Windows Azure website.
Well, there we see Brian's desktop up on the screen, and boy, you got a lot of stuff going on there in Windows Azure. What is all that stuff?
I do have a lot of stuff. Well, you know, we have so many different offerings now in Windows Azure. You know, we started out primarily with cloud services, but there's also now virtual machines, and there's mobile services, and there's Windows Azure websites, and we have storage accounts, and media services and so on, and all of that is really listed here, so it's basically just a heap of everything I've got in every facet of Azure. And you know what it's like. We're out talking to so many people, demoing different things, so it's all displayed right here. So, and sometimes I admit I'm a little forgetful and deleting stuff I don't need anymore, but there's tons of stuff in here, which is really great.
That's good. So let's look at a website. So if I remember correctly from last time with Brady, it's really easy to set up a website in Azure. I mean, it's literally like new. You click that plus new button there and boom, you got a website running, you know, at a given URL. And there was a gallery, so you can actually install some pre-installed software like, you know, WordPress or .NET Nuke or some of those web apps that are in the web gallery. But if I guess if we're just doing a custom application, you would just create a blank site, and then you're kind of just left with a, you know, you got a place you can FTP into, right?
That's right. Yeah. So I think we did show that with Brady, the gallery, and how many options there are for just click and get going. So if you wanted that WordPress blog and so on, or a blog engine, there's so many different templates in there to choose from. So you don't have to worry about, you know, in the case of, say, blog engine, downloading the code and then creating a Visual Studio project just to upload that, that all exists as a template. But if you do want to create some code or a basic website, you could do that. And so what I'll do here is go into the Windows Azure website, and I'll just click Quick Create, so we create an empty project, essentially. And the first thing we need to do is specify a URL, and by default, everything has a .azurewebsites.net domain name, and I will just call this BTH Demo Project 2, because I already created just BTH Demo Project, and we'll create that in the East region, and I'll click Create Website. And so we're going to see on my dashboard here that BTH Demo Project 2 is currently being created. And you can see how quickly that has been provisioned and set up. And that's because the way Windows Azure Websites, it's really a software as a service, right, where we can create a website in the Windows Azure Websites software as a service offering. And so it's very quick to provision something. So we're not having to spin up dedicated virtual machines in this case to host everything like we would with a virtual machine. So it's very instantaneous to do this. Now, by default, this project doesn't really have anything associated with it. We could navigate to this web page, but it's essentially just an empty web page that's there. And what we're going to want to do is, with this, I can click on my demo project to dive into the dashboard, and we can see exactly how much consumption we've had in terms of CPU time and data and everything else. And this lets us know how we're doing in terms of scalability, and eventually if we want to scale this out to reserved instances and so on. But on the quick glance section of this page, we could see a lot of options here for doing things like setting up TFS publishing or Git publishing. And we can also download a published profile. And the nice thing about that, the published profile, I find a lot of people aren't familiar with that, but with Visual Studio, you can bring in a published profile which has all of your stuff built in to automatically deploy something to, in this case, a Windows Azure website. So it makes it really easy if you're not interested in doing source control. You can quickly just integrate a published profile to deploy directly from Visual Studio, and it's really just nice and easy without having to manually FTP everything up.
But then you'd also be flying by the seat of your pants without source control. We wouldn't want to recommend that to anybody, right?
True. You don't necessarily want to recommend that, but it kind of depends. Maybe you want a published profile, but maybe you're just doing the old zip source control. A lot of people do different things. I guess it would depend on how much you really want, or maybe you do want to use Git on the back end, but you don't want a continuous integration. Maybe you want to separate that out so that you control exactly how and when things get published. So, there's a lot of different scenarios that this might apply to somebody, but...
I think a clear one would be, you know, in a typical developer environment, the developer, let's say you have a developer account for Azure where you're doing your continuous integration, you might be doing that off source control, but if you have a production account, and let's say it's a larger team, you might have another person or team that's responsible for managing that production environment. And there, you know, they're not doing continuous integration. They might just be taking, you know, here's, you know, release one, here's release two, when, you know, after it's gone through testing and everything, and really tightly controlling those deployments. So it's good for that scenario. Now, for we see there TFS and Git publishing. So those are both obviously source control options. TFS more in the Microsoft camp. So I'm thinking typically a developer who's in Visual Studio building, you know, probably something, you know, it's Microsoft oriented. How do they get going? So I assume, let's say we have an ASP.NET developer and they're going to just want to publish something and hook it up to source control.
Yeah, it's real simple to get going. In fact, you can create now a free TFS account online, and what we'll do is we'll just associate a project with that with our TFS account, and you can currently get a TFS account for free for up to 5 users. So again, it handles a small team environment really, really quite easily. And as most people know who use Git, Git is free as long as your source code repositories are public. Otherwise, if you want to do private repositories in Git, that's a paid model. But what I'll do is I'll open up Visual Studio.
So wait a second. TFS is free? Like, this is not software I have to install. This is something that is online? I thought TFS is a server that you run, like, in your company.
Yes, it could be both, right? I mean, everything needs a cloud solution these days, right? You have your mail Outlook client, but you also want to be able to get it in the cloud. So it's the same thing with TFS. In fact, I know that we've been through this, right, where if you want to install TFS locally, say you're, you know, just developing at home, TFS has actually made that really easy in the latest versions to do that for simple installations. However, you want to do that in the cloud now, right? If you're working probably remotely, especially as more and more developers are independent or working at cooperative co-working facilities and whatnot, you want everything in the cloud. And you don't have to be VPNing to your home or wherever. And you just want a service in the cloud. So everything is online now, as it should be. And teams are distributed as well. So it really makes it a lot easier to get going with using TFS as a service instead of having to worry about installing it.
Yeah, I asked that question kind of facetiously because obviously I know what's going on. But TFS started as a server-based product from Microsoft, but they announced, I guess, what, about a year ago that they were going to do it in the cloud. And from what I understand, it's actually implemented on Windows Azure itself. Like, it's actually hosted that way.
Yeah, that is my understanding as well. So we should, in fact, hopefully in a future episode, since I'm in North Carolina, a lot of these guys are in Raleigh. Maybe we can get some of them on to talk about it a little bit. So I'll send Brian Harry an email. So what I'll do is I'll click New Project, and we'll just create an empty ASP.NET MVC web application, and I'll just call this Web Application 2. We'll do an MVC 4 app, and I'll click OK. And, of course, we have the standard project templates, and we'll use an ASPX view engine, no test project, and I'll just click OK. And what we'll do is we'll get the default somewhat boring MVC, you know, template that we can then customize. And we'll let this get created here. And here it is. We just have a basic a template. And the first thing I'm going to do is we will go to our Team Explorer. And I already have logged in to my TFS account, which is within Visual Studio. In this case, my project here is just bhitney.visualstudio.com. And what we'll do is I will click on Home under Projects and Teams, and we're going to create a new team project, which will open up the team website that allows us to create a new team project. And I'll just call this BTH Demo 2. Give it a basic description here, and I'll click Create Project. And so this will create, and I've got a whole bunch of just basic projects that I've created for demo purposes in TFS, but this will just go ahead and create BTH Demo 2 in my TFS repository. Okay, and I love the messaging there. Your team is going to absolutely love this. That's awesome. So there, we have that project created. And now back in Visual Studio,
It's like they were working with the guy from Men's Warehouse.
Yeah,
you're going to love the way you look after you get this.
Yeah, I guarantee it. So what we'll do is I'll right-click on the solution itself, the MVC app, and I'll just say Add Solution to Source Control. And what it will do is it'll open up a window that will allow me to select which project I want to add this to, which I'll just select BTH Demo 2, and we'll click OK. And then we can go ahead and check in the entire project very easily. We'll just go ahead and do that, and I'll just label this with a comment of initial check-in, and we'll just check everything in. So the default template has about 100 or so items in it, so we'll just go ahead and let that run. Now, while that's checking everything in, we'll go back to my BTH Demo Project 2 in Windows Azure Websites, and I'll just click Setup TFS Publishing. And this is what we're going to have to do now is...
So let's back up for a second. So what you just did before is you create a new project in Visual Studio. You connected
Right.
it to the TFS service online. So you have your source code checked into TFS, and
Right.
now we're going to link it into Azure.
Exactly.
Right?
So we have
There's three
essentially.
moving pieces here, basically.
Yes, there are. In fact, we could check that into a different TFS server. We could, in fact, you could use TFS, obviously, and not tie it in Windows Azure websites if you don't want to, right? But the key component now is now that we have our solution tied to that source control project in TFS, now we want to link the two, right? We have our Windows Azure website project, and we have our TFS project, and now what we want to do is we want to authorize a connection between Windows Azure websites and our TFS account to enable continuous integration, and that requires us to approve that. And so by clicking the Setup TFS Publishing, it will ask me for my credentials. So I'll give it the address, in this case, which is just bhitney.visualstudio.com. That's my TFS account. And if you don't have one yet, you could just click the Create a TFS Account Now link, and I'll click Authorize Now. And it will say, hey, do you want to allow this, right? You have to, of course, give it permission to access your repository, and we'll click accept. And what will happen is this window will close now that we're saying accept. And what will happen is we'll go back and we'll say which project we want to accept. And sometimes I see that this, for whatever reason, doesn't seem to work on the first try. Why that is, I don't know.
So perhaps we should say, I think that the TFS service is still in preview mode, so things like
yeah.
this can happen. Or we
yeah.
might edit them out.
Right. Click accept. See, there we go. And it will show us all the projects in this dropdown that I have, and we have BTH Demo 2 as the project we'd like to publish. And I'll just click the check mark. We have all of our status here. By the way, now it says that our TFS project is linked, and it will build and deploy on our next check-in. So even though we checked everything in, it's not going to automatically deploy yet until we do a check-in. So if we jump back to our project, our MVC application, I'll just check this out automatically, and I'll just say new check-in. And
so before you... Before you checked it in, you might just want to hit the website over in Azure and verify there's nothing up there, right? We should get that blank standard, you know, hey, push some code here page, right?
Right, exactly. So if I click on this is bhdemoproject2.azurewebsites.net, this will be just the empty Windows Azure Websites project, right, that has been created. There's nothing else here, and, you know, so on. This is what we have to do if we want to link something up. So even though our projects are linked, it doesn't actually push out until we do our first check-in. So what we'll do, I just put new check-in here really just as a way to automatically check out the document. And you can see if we click check-in, it's only going to check in one item because obviously that's the controller. And what this will do is this will have TFS upon this check-in automatically create a build and push that out to our Windows Azure website. And this usually, especially in the first time, this might take a few moments, but if we go back to our Windows Azure websites and I click on deployments, you'll see that we still have the TFS project is linked, and it will deploy on our next check-in. We'll just let this sit for a second, and eventually this will refresh, showing that that it saw a check-in and it created a deployment for us. Okay, so we checked everything in. Now this is going to take a few moments to deploy, usually especially for the first time we deploy. So what I did beforehand, right before we started recording this, is I created just BTH demo project and checked in a very similar template-based site. And so I'll click on that. This is my Windows Azure website, and see how under deployment history, it shows an active deployment. And every time now that we check in, we'll do a continuous integration where it will rebuild and push out our application. And so if we click the browse button, we can go over to our demo site.
Now, this isn't a cheat or anything. You're not scamming us, Brian.
This is really deployed, right? This is really deployed. In fact, you can see here that I just put a comment here like check-in just on the default text, and this is the empty project. So we have our MVC web application up there. And so if we were to go back into that project and make some changes and whatnot and check them in, it'll automatically get pushed up to our Windows Azure website.
That's pretty slick. I mean, that's just nice to have that all integrated. So now, like you said, if you go back and change the code like you did before, you don't even have to think about it. Like, you don't have to ever come back to the Azure portal. You would just be in Visual Studio, check in and hit F5 in your browser and your site's there, correct?
Exactly.
That's nice. And how much did all this stuff cost again?
Yeah, it doesn't cost anything right now, right? I mean, the Windows Azure websites is in a free preview. I don't know what the pricing is going to look like. I suspect that there'll be I certainly hope there'll be some kind of freemium or very, very low price offering for that. Currently, you can have up to 10 Windows Azure websites for free, which is really great. And the TFS preview is free for up to 5 users. So there really is, it's really a great way to get started. And like I said, too, before.
And Visual Studio Express would also be free. So you'd be free end to end right now.
Exactly. So there's nothing to stop you from having source control, having a great IDE to work with, a really redundant back end, and it doesn't cost you anything.
I like that.
Yeah. So what else do we have coming up on the horizon here, Peter? You know, we're in the portal here, and one thing that I noticed, and for those especially who read Scott Guthrie's blog and keep up to date on everything that's going on in Windows Azure, there's been a lot of changes to Windows Azure mobile services.
Yes, there were some recent announcements made for that, especially support for iOS. When it first started out, it primarily supported Windows Store and Windows Phone apps. And the rumor on the street I hear is that it should also pretty quickly be expanding to Android in the future. So mobile services in Azure are really great because it helps with authentication and push notifications and things like that and setting that up automatically. So these mobile services, I mean, like I said, they do authentication, push notifications, but it's also a great way to connect a mobile app to storage on the back end. So if you're doing an app in iOS or Windows Phone or Windows 8, and you want to store the user's data somewhere in the back end, it's really easy to just push that into Azure. And when you go in the portal, you just provision these things, say, I want a new service, and you get a bunch of templated code and proxy services that set that up for you. So what we'll do is in a next episode, we'll probably sit and we're going to go through, do a demo of that, explain what it does and how it can benefit folks. And again, it's not just for Windows developers. It's also iOS and coming quickly, Android should be up in there too.
Yeah, that sounds great. Looking forward to it.